Father, make light my prayer and strong my faith. Swift my feet and sure my hand to carry your will to the ends of the earth and spread the good news of your love through the land. Make peaceful the night and bright the day, with angels calling the rising suns. Now high is the road and clear is the way, and finding your presence has just begun. Oh, that the one who has caused the earth to turn and the stars in their crowning glory to bless the skies with a kingly prize could stay so near to my praying. Father, make strong my heart to know your love and assure my faith to stand on, holding the earth in the palm of your hand. We are your faith-bound children. Well,
good morning, everyone. This is Crystalyn Beek-Larson and my delightful guest host, co-host today, Dave Tucker from Cypress, California. Good morning, Dave.
Top of the morning to everyone.
Well, we have got a great show scheduled for today. We're going to be discussing ministering to the world outside the movement through existing religions that might be very open to possibly creating sorts of strategic alliances with us in terms of outreach, conferences, shared goals. It's basically working with people outside the movement and not just preaching to the choir all the time. That's the general idea of the show. And sort of a secondary topic is a way to really support and get on board the initiative for creating 1,000 new study groups. And so we're very open to your calls and your questions, feedback, or discussion on the topic. We hope you will all really consider calling in, even if you wish to do so anonymously, to join in the discussion today. So, Dave, I'm so happy that you agreed to co-host the show with me today. Maybe you can share with me.
It's a blessing. Yeah, it's a blessing. When you asked, I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. Yeah, absolutely. I don't know. Anytime there's an opportunity to speak about the Lord, it's fantastic. So yeah, absolutely. I'm all in.
Terrific. Well, I know that in this last week, you posted on your Facebook page one of the articles that I had sent you regarding sort of the direction that, or some of the philosophical considerations, I would say, that emergent Christianity has been.
Oh, the emergent church. Wonderful, wonderful article. In fact, there's a lot of people on my Facebook page who commented on that article. I mean, there's even people who've gone so far as to say, wow, almost makes me want to join a church again. And that's wonderful. When you have anything that's going to inspire people to want to follow the Lord like that, you're going to see it's going to be a rush forward. And it's just amazing times that we live in. And And thank you once again for sending that article. It's just amazing. Anybody who wants it, please send me a message on Facebook. I'll forward it to you.
This is an article that I've posted before on the SOC admin page and also links that I've posted through my Facebook page. But the gist of this is it's an article that was written 2 years ago by Howard Bess and was available on AltNet. And what he tries to do is to condense some much more prolific writings to try to gel it down to sort of 8 or 9 primary philosophical areas where we, the Urantia Book Readers and Christianity, or this sort of new fringe of Christianity, are really very compatible. Are there any of those points that really struck you, Dave?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the point that hit me the hardest was that these people are saying, you know, no, that's not the God I know. That's not the God I love. That's not the God that loves me. And gosh, that's so wonderful to hear that, because that's not the person saying that. That's the Spirit moving them to say that. And that's a powerful, powerful force. And Robert Burns, I attend his study groups every Thursday, and he had told me on Thursday that, you know, it's when we are able to get out of the way, just get out of the way and allow the Spirit to lead you, is when you're open to great and powerful things. And I wholeheartedly agree with that and believe it. And it's amazing because you can see it happening in other people. And that article, like I said, was so inspiring to see that these people are people who want to follow Christ, but they want to follow Christ, not necessarily anything else. Because anything else is just what it is. It's anything else. It's not Christ. And that's so wonderful to hear people enthused to do that.
Well, maybe you can share with our listeners a little bit about your background, how you, I believe you've been reading the Ranch book for about 11 years, and sounds like from some of the things I've shared with you online and read in your blogs that you probably were pretty tuned in to religion before you found the Urantia book. Is that a correct assumption?
Well, I mean, fair but partly cloudy, and I'll explain why.
Okay.
Essentially, I was born and baptized Catholic. However, the family never, it wasn't a major deal unless Grandma was looking, if that makes any sense. If Grandma was looking, then it was like, okay, it's time to go to church and pretend like you do it every Sunday. It was one of those type of family households. And but of course, we made it on Easter and the things that counted, and that's how I was raised to believe. It's like, oh, well, you go when it counts, and I'm like, well, why does it count on this day and not every day?
Holy days.
Exactly. And so, I mean, and questions like that arose throughout my youth, and I just knew, like, I think I was about 7 years old, and I had watched a minister show on TV, and the minister was saying, you know, call in now and accept Jesus in your heart. And I remember at like 7 years old, crying my eyes out, feeling bad about lying and embellishing and, you know, not being better for my mom. I mean, things that I, at that age, that I felt really, really bad about. So I called in and they got me on the air and he had done a prayer with me and accepted Jesus in my heart. And I went, oh, this is amazing. It was a life-changing event, but after that, I just kind of, you know, it's like a muscle. If you don't work it, it goes limp. If you work it, it gets strong. And so for a long time, I didn't work it, and I didn't have Jesus in my life. And then one of my best friends who I grew up with and played games with and went to high school, all kinds of stuff, his name is Jacob Dix, he had actually introduced the Urantia book to me. But just prior to that, we were reading all sorts of spiritual books and anything, just to try to find truth, essentially. And we had some great book journeys. I started off with the Celestine Prophecy, progressed to Conversations with God, and I liked a lot that was said in there, but there was still something that wasn't there, and then he brought home this giant blue book.
So he hadn't read it before.
No, he had not. It was given to him by a gentleman named Wilsey, who actually, I just let him stay with him for a while in Sedona, Arizona.
Oh.
And he gave him the book, and he brought that home. And it was amazing because we always would switch off on different books and find something new to read, you know, every month or two. And he stuck with this big blue book for a long time. And I went, wow. And I said, so let's talk about that. And, of course, his eyebrows perked up. And he goes, okay, we are going to read about government on a neighboring planet. I went, what?
Wow.
Yeah. But it was amazing because something in there said, wow, that's done right. I don't know who did it and how it's done, but it's done right. And so it led me to want to finish reading about Jesus. And then once I finally read the entire Jesus papers, I came home, and at the time I smoked cigarettes. Since then I've quit it. I've stopped. But I came home, I had a cigarette on the balcony, and I just broke down in tears, and I realized, you know, my entire life I've been lived greedy just for me. And at that moment I felt such an embrace by Jesus. And to me, he had said a term of endearment, because I'm half Mexican, and he had said, come here, mijo, to me, and he grabbed me, and he embraced me, and at that moment, I just felt like, oh my gosh, here I am in the presence of the creator of all, and he is making me feel like I am the absolutely most important thing to him in the entire existence right there, right now, and that's such a humbling feeling. And since then, I was like, okay, it's game on. You did it for me. You love me. I know you love me. You've proved you love me. I'm going to do everything I possibly can to show others about this love, this joy. And so through my journey of the Urantia book, I've learned that, you know what, it's not about any one book, even if the Urantia book wasn't there in my life right now. It's about following Jesus. It's about learning about truth and recognizing truth. And when you can grasp that and comprehend it and live, use it in your daily life, now you're showing others without even ministering. I mean,
right.
Without even saying any words, and that's the most important thing. And so, back to the subject at hand, you, when you had shown me that article, these people are doing that very thing. They are recognizing truth, and they are getting enthusiastic about it. And there's more than one, and now it's multiplying, and it's going to be great because I'm alive at these times. So I'm very, very, very thankful and excited.
Yeah, I feel the same way, and my experience when I went to my first emergent Christian conference in Minneapolis last fall, it was an event called Christianity 21. And the reason was that they were sort of launching in the 21st century version of Christianity, so that new reformation, if you will, that one of our guests who we had on shortly after that conference was a woman named Phyllis Tickle, who's a theologian. She's an Episcopalian, and she's been very prolific in writing about the new emergence from a historical perspective. And she says about every 500 years, Christianity has gone through a major reformation of sorts, and that we're due, you know. 20th century was really the time that was sort of due to occur again. And she's also been, she's familiar with the Urantia book, has a copy and has read, if not all of it, you know, several parts of it. And she's quite, you know, positive. She says even though she hasn't necessarily accepted this as her end-all, be-all, and end-all theology, she's very, she was very positive in the way she referred to it. But she thinks, too, that there are many different sort of floods of new thought that are entering Christianity, and that it's, you know, it's time. I've heard another very successful Christian pastor who was talking about how to grow your church and talking about the kind of authenticity, humility, clarity, and consistency, focusing on ministering to the lost sheep, to really embrace Jesus' methods, for ministry as the way to build a church or a religious organization that has perhaps in the past been sort of floundering. And I heard Doug Padgett, who is an emergent leader, who's built a community in the Minneapolis area called Solomon's Porch. And he pretty much says the same thing. You know, it's about how you live your life. It's about showing by example, leading by example. And going back to this other pastor, he did a workshop that my stepdad attended a few weeks ago. And I was just blown away just reading Jerry's notes about the program and thinking, hey, this is really good stuff. And he gave an example of one of the ways that he led his congregation and his staff by example. They have a fairly large parking lot outside their church. And, you know, normally the three spots right in the front are reserved for the minister, the assistant pastor, and the church elder. And in his case, he just started parking the farthest away from the church instead of using that space that was right up front. And he said within just a couple of days, all the rest of the staff at the church started parking out there. And he says just something as simple as that can show an attitude of service and commitment rather than, sort of having some special position, like on the right hand of Jesus at the table.
We all know that, yeah, when Judas ran up to the front.
Exactly. Well, believe it or not, we have a call already. Should we take our caller? All right,
absolutely.
Hold on. Hello, caller, you're on the air. Hello?
May I just listen to the show? I don't care to participate. I just want to listen.
Okay, terrific. Thanks for calling in.
Tell me a little bit
about what are some of the things you've been thinking about on this topic.
How do I participate? I think that's the first and foremost. Only because it's something that's calling to my heart. You know, there's only been a few things recently that I have time to devote to, and I think this has got to be one of them. I have to make time for something like this because we don't even have to go in and push our agenda. You know, we don't even have to talk anything about your Urantia book. And I think part of the mission, part of the responsibility for your Urantia book readers is not to talk about it, but to interpret, give your interpretation of it. And the person you're speaking with, it's up to their spirit of truth to discern what's truthful for them. And of course, you're going to do that by being the living example. One other way that I've found to be very, very effective, which is exactly what Jesus would do, is ask questions. And so I asked sincere questions that I believe people who know nothing about God would ask. And when you ask a question to somebody, it is a form of submission. It is a form of service. It's about stepping away, stepping out of the conversation, and forcing this person, or not forcing, but leading this person to think. And when they can give their own interpretation and share their truth with others, now you're adding to the collective consciousness, and it's just much easier for everybody else to embrace those thoughts and concepts. So I really believe that any of us talking about God, envisioning God, and learning to do God's will, that's part of the process. Not all of us are going to be able to be walking Jesus's. In fact, a lot of us are not. Most of us are not. Very, very few would get close enough to be considered a candidate. But the whole point is it's not the destination, it's the journey. It's infinitely more important what you are becoming than what you are today. And, you know, that's these truths and concepts that I've learned through the Urantia book. We don't even have to mention anything about the Urantia book. We just go and you give these pieces of advice when people ask for it. And when they don't ask for it, you give it to them without saying anything.
Well, and it's a wonderful way to engage people in the discussion, you know.
Oh, certainly.
When I've posted questions that are provocative, it's been wonderful to see how many people sort of get pulled into the discussion who maybe are not normally very verbal in our Facebook relationship, you know. And it's been a great experience. I found some of my favorite questions off Philip Gulley's profile.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. He's got some great stuff.
He's been a guest on our show twice now, and hopefully will be again in the future. But I just love his books, and I love his work. And so he sort of represents for me the more Christian Universalist subsect of the Reformation that we see happening. And on the emergent side, there's a very broad spectrum of theological differences and theological opinions or ideologies that are involved. And one of the things that I found so refreshing was that they had 21 women all coming from very different theological platforms who were all there dialoguing together peacefully. There were no arguments. There was no acrimony. It was just a very Urmia-style lecture and conference. And there was an openness to people who had different points of view that was extremely spiritually fragrant. And
wow.
I think this is an arena where more of us could be participating in a very real way. You know, not going in necessarily to teach, but going in to learn from them. And this the thing about this sort of new movement in Christianity is it already has this broad, wide, all-encompassing existing foundation and existing framework. And I think we would be well within our mandate, I would say, to work from within that group as opposed to trying to reinvent the wheel.
Absolutely, yeah. I just meant more of the sharing our truth and our wisdom, because I think we do have a responsibility, no matter what religion you're a part of, you have a responsibility to share that light, that joy, that inner peace that you have, our faith. And to go into anywhere I go, I'm going to do that, you know. And I think that the greatest thing about it is it's not an opinion, it's a lifestyle, it's the way you live, it's how you treat others. Last night, my fiance in April, I took her out for her birthday to a restaurant called Fogo de Chao, and it was an amazing restaurant. But I had looked at her and I said, "You see the service we're getting here? It's fantastic." I told her, "Before I die, I want to learn to serve like this for somebody else, or for many people, without anything else in return, without getting any of it." I was like, "That's something I want to accomplish before I die." And she looked at me like, "That's wonderful." And I was like, "It is. You know, this is what each of us are going to do." And I think it's important that you mention the very Urmia type of lecture that you listen to, because there's a lesson in that as well. As Sim Boyton never revealed his religion the entire time.
Exactly.
He had that school of religion and philosophy, never once revealed his own true religion, and that's great. That's a lesson to learn for all of us.
Brother Dave, you know, one of our regulars on the chat room every week, he just posted a comment that the new leaders and teachers sharing this great revelation should be church neutral. And he's asked us to see page 1868. I'm hoping that he'll post the quote for me, because I'm not quite as ambidextrous, I guess, as Paula, to be able to just pull out quotes as I'm looking at the chat room and talking on the air. So, Bro Dave, if you care to share that quote, I'd be very grateful. So we do have another caller. Just before I introduce or add the new caller to the air, I wanted to point out that one of the things we want to look at during this show is how we can use strategic alliances with existing organizations to sort of pick the low-hanging fruit and to create strategic alliances with existing structures within our contemporary religious world. So any of our listeners who'd like to call in and talk to that topic, you're welcome. Hang on a second. Hello, 205, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello?
Hi, how are you? This is Justin Mooney.
Hi, Justin.
Hey, how are you doing, Crystal?
I'm doing very well today.
Yeah, it's good to talk to you. I actually met Crystal through Facebook. And I think that's a way that a lot of people have met other readers of Urantia, is through Facebook. And what I did really is just go to the Urantia website or the member group and just kind of friend everybody there. And what Facebook does is it really allows you to create communities on your own, because you will, you know, friend a lot of people, and you'll have topics of conversations that you really set through your own status updates. And so you can have conversations with basically everybody that you're friends with, in addition to the member group of Facebook. So there's a lot of things that you can do with that.
Absolutely. Thanks for sharing that.
And by the way, we really appreciated your animation at the Montreal Festival. Got a lot of laughs, and we really appreciated the really outside-the-box thinking you did with that.
You know, that's what I try to do. I mean, I'll come up with just a thought in my head, and I'll just automatically post it through Facebook or Twitter. I have a couple of Twitter handles as well, and it's just a way to be expressive, and it's a way to share your thoughts. And the great thing is that you get feedback from your thoughts, you know, and you can kind of change the way you think based on what other people might interpret it with.
Absolutely. What are some of the questions you've posited to your friends list that have received the best response?
You know, a good strategy that I have is, you know, if I have a question that comes into my head as I have a certain life circumstance, and I'll have a question and I'll post it, you know, say, what should I do at this moment? You know, that's a thought that you have very often, but if you think in those terms for certain life circumstances, it can be very functional for you. So I try to post the question that I have as it comes into my head. And, you know, it may be a spiritual way, it may be a way that I learned from a religion to think, but I think it helps to be able to formulate those thoughts. And so I just try to give people a certain way to think.
That's what we all have to do, stimulate mind process, stimulate the mind, get everybody wondering and asking and questions. It's great because you get interaction. And thanks so much for sharing. I too have a similar experience with Facebook, and I love posting questions. I love interacting with people. And the greatest thing you can do is spread your truth as far as possible and live your truth. And Facebook is a great way to do that. A social networking site where people can get very interactive. In fact, even recently I've delved into the whole video recording aspect. I've given it a couple tries.
And
it's great to get, you know, participate in the different things that they have. Some people love playing just the games, but it's a great way to minister to and to be ministered to as well. And I love that process.
And it takes away the whole teacher-learner dichotomy, you know, because we're all learning and we're all teaching, because we've all got an interpretation of our own lives, and we've all got a certain spark of truth within us, and we're really just trying to help other people tap into that spark of truth. And so if we can give an interpretation that is true for us, then it's got to work for somebody else to a certain degree, or maybe it helps them find their own way to that spark of truth.
God bless that. Absolutely.
As Questor, one of our regulars, says every week on here, let your light shine. And, you know, for
Absolutely.
Many years, I was a little bit reticent, I would say, to do that, or didn't really know if my light was really that bright, so to speak. It took me a long time to come around to really committing to ministry as my avocation. And I had wanted to be a minister since I was in high school. But I also had a pretty rebellious period in there, and I just didn't feel worthy. And one of the things that really turned that around for me was a discussion we had at study group a few years back. Mo Siegel had mentioned that it was the story about, and I can never remember his name when I get on the air, but the guy who sort of rallied Congress and rallied the U.S. to get involved in the first Afghan war with the Soviets. Do you guys remember the name of that film or that book?
No.
What I'm talking
not
about.
Me.
If anybody
I'm a history
on the board,
major, but no, I don't know that one.
If anyone on the board can help me, I'm having a moment of, let's call it an elder moment. I can't remember his name. But anyway, it was a congressman from, I think, from Texas who realized that the Afghans were fighting the Soviets without any sophisticated weaponry, and that they would be in the position to really make a difference if they were supported. And anyway, Mo was talking about this guy in study group, and he was talking about the kind of reputation this guy had for being sort of a womanizer and a serious party guy. And, you know, his own personal life was not anything close to what you would consider holy, but that he was the one who recognized and saw the light sort of shining on this path through the jungle, so to speak. And he was passionate enough about it that he started this campaign. And within a fairly short period of time, he had succeeded in getting some military support for the Afghans. And it's really quite an inspiring story. And anyway, they made a movie about it a couple years ago that starred Tom Hanks as the congressman. But the point that Mo made was God doesn't use the best people to fulfill
right.
his missions. He uses those who are available. And that
wow.
really, really hit home for me. I realized I didn't have to be perfect. I didn't have to eschew my somewhat rebellious background, that I could actually use that experience very effectively in my ministry. And it's turned out to be the truth. It has really worked because I can identify with a fairly broad spectrum of humanity. And once I made the commitment to really follow this calling and help our planetary helpers, help our angels, you know, be part of the solution instead of part of the problem. Once I really committed to that, my life was really almost instantly transformed. And I'm not saying that I was instantly transformed, but the opportunities that came to me were just better than anything I could have ever imagined.
Wow, that's wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Oh, absolutely, and I think I share a parallel to that, and I think a lot of people do, but I think maybe that was the purpose of of Christ bestowing himself on this level of existence so that he had that experience, so that he was able to relate. I think the best ministers are the ones who came from, you know, not necessarily a rich background or, you know, the most perfect background, as you would say, but you know, because we're on an imperfect world, and you can't really reign from on high. You have to reign from within the people. You have to really be able to make that connection to people, or they won't listen to you.
Yeah, I think
I
that's
agree.
True. And you also have to really be sincere, and I think that I did have, in fact, kind of a rich background. Not rich materially, but rich in diversity and experience, because, you know, growing up in a missionary community overseas, that was quite the great, I had a lot of really great mentors. And my parents were also great mentors in that they were living lives of devotion and service. So, but, you know, I would probably have been the last person many of my friends would have expected to get involved in ministry. Especially some of my high school or college friends. But I was majoring in religious studies, and it's always been something that I've been passionately interested in.
And me as well. I actually majored, like I said, history, but also philosophy. And, you know, when I was in college, I was actually an atheist. And,
oh, really?
Yeah, I had all these explanations of, you know, how you create your own reality, and there was nothing that was absolutely true. And I guess about the time I was 23 or so, just gotten out of college, started having a lot of synchronistic experiences to be shown that, you know, everything is connected, and there is something that's driving. There is something that's real. And, you know, then I sort of came to the conclusion that there is such a thing as existence, and I think that's how I actually came to the book. I was searching for some sort of explanation, because all of the evolutionary religions, it seemed like they didn't really give an explanation that I could really grasp onto as being absolute, because it all seemed to be so fraught with human frailty.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when I found the book, at first, I just thought, you know, this is great, but it's kind of weird, you know. I don't know if I can really believe what it says. But I think a lot of people, when they first start reading it, of course, they're going to be unsure. But when you start to read and see how it's worded and see all the answers and the wholeness of it, it just overwhelms you.
Mm-hmm.
And it provides all the answers, you know. One part will answer another question that you have.
Isn't that wonderful how just when it brings up a question, almost for the whole
answer
group,
it.
The next paragraph, if you keep reading, they answer it.
Yeah, that definitely happens.
And I have a sense that that's how the forum was involved with the revelation, was that the fact that they would be discussing some of the papers, and then it would bring up questions, and then the next phase of the revelation would be answering those questions. And I think that's why it was probably really crucial to have so many people involved in the study process, and which sort of ironically dovetails nicely or segues nicely into one of the other topics we want to talk about, which is the creation of thousands of study groups.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, what does it take to really take this mission or this assignment seriously? You know, how do we move in that direction? What are some of the tried and true approaches? And why do we need to be part of a study group? You know, those of us who've studied on our own for years and then gotten involved in a study group have almost universally found that reading the book and studying the book with other people really expands our own understanding of the truth it contains, because we are able to see a specific truth with several different perspectives. And it's just, it's not only mind expanding, but it's also personality stabilizing, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely.
And I know, Dave, you just are starting a brand new study group right as we speak.
Yeah, and actually tomorrow will be my first study group. It'll be at 6 p.m., and it's going to be a topical study group. But I think to answer your question, what do we need to get these started, I would say a plate of cookies. Cookies are what it's going to be. If you cook them, Crystal, and they will come. Or if you bake them.
If you bake them, they will come. So,
yeah, you know,
he is having a gingerbread house.
Yeah. Well, you know, every person that I work with in my building, I've bought a Urantia book for either Christmas or their birthday or something special. And so the greatest thing is I got one person. Yeah. And the greatest thing is that one of them is going to be coming. So I'm blessed for that she's able to, like, we talk about God a lot, even at work, and she's going to be coming to the study group. So it's going to be really cool. Along with her, there's other readers in the area who've already contacted me. And really all you have to do is put forth the effort. It doesn't take much of anything. Sure, I probably spent maybe a half an hour's worth of time organizing the topic that we're going to have, the discussion, the papers we're going to read, and that's it. That's all it's going to take. You know, more importantly, it's about opening yourself up to the opportunity. You know,
I'm sorry, is the group going to be meeting at your workplace or at your home?
No, at my home. It's going to be at my home. It's going to be on Sundays at 6 p.m., and people are going to be coming. People that I go to my other study group on Thursday nights. There's also going to be just other people who are closer to my home. So it's opening up the opportunity is really what it is. You know, it's allowing yourself to be a part of something bigger than yourself. And so another way that I'm going to be participating with this study group is I'm going to be taking notes during my study group. And at the end of the group, I'm going to get onto Facebook and I'm going to make a video of a summary of our study group. So I'm going to put down the topic that we discussed, the conclusions we came to, and that itself will post, you know, get other people involved. I have about 800 and something friends on Facebook who now have the opportunity to participate in my study group, even though they weren't there. And so it's about doing things like that, you know, and taking advantage. So I'm excited. I'm super excited.
Yeah, one of our regular listeners and chat room participants also started a study group via Blog Talk Radio for people, I think, if I'm not mistaken, in his region. But so that, you know, people who weren't able to travel very far or for whom, you know, travel was, you know, too inconvenient, they can just call in and have a study group just like we're doing here. And that's really how the Wednesday morning study group started with our sister Ann Garner. That's part of the topic of this discussion is how can we utilize these new applications, these new internet networking processes to do outreach and to spread the teachings and to also collaborate with other groups that are doing the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
I really think it's the future of the Grandstra movement is online, because it really connects the entire world. And I know that you know, at its core, it's a community thing, but it's also a worldwide thing, because, you know, as it says in the book, we need to, you know, establish more, you know, like one language and one world. And I think the internet's really the way that we're going to do that. But, you know, one idea that I had as far as how to get people involved in the study groups is, you know, come up with questions during the study group and questions that you might not be able to have an answer for, you can make that the topic for the next group, for the next meeting. And, you know, then instead of one person having, you know, one idea for a topic and kind of running the show, you can have everybody kind of run the show.
Yeah.
And, you know, have everybody be the leader. And, you know, maybe you can branch out from there to have other groups and things like that. But I think everybody really has to contribute that way. But that's the great thing about groups, though, is that it's, you know, it's sort of an emotional connection within everybody. You know, it's not really teaching and learning. It's really everybody interpreting and everybody learning.
Mm-hmm.
And,
absolutely.
You know, at the groups that I've been to, that's really what I get away from it, is seeing how other people react to the book and how it touches them and how they have such an emotional connection to it.
One of the things that I was really impressed with was, you know, when we started the Urantia Study Group Leadership Network, or the, I guess it's the Urantia Study Group Leaders Network on Facebook, that we just instantly got all of these people coming on that discussion board and sharing how they had just created a new study group doing this, or how they had totally been inspired by something that one person did, that, oh my gosh, this is something I could do. And even for people who are what I would say sort of remotely located, or don't have any other study groups in their local area, how they can commit to starting a study group, as Dave showed, just by giving Urantia books as gifts to their sort of inner circle of contacts and then baking cookies, you know? And we had another woman, Andrea, who can't be with us today because she's on the road with the Let the Light In tour. But she shared that remarkable experience where the pastor of her Unity Church said, you know, I know you are really familiar with the Ranch book. There are a lot of other people here that are, you know, interested in finding out more about that. And I wondered if you'd be willing to do the sermon next week and talk about the Ranch book. And she was overjoyed, but then she was a little intimidated by, like, oh my gosh, what do I say? And I think she must have been really guided by Spirit of Truth or the Father, her angels, because she decided to present something on the history of religions, the history of religion on our planet, which sort of showed how religious concepts had evolved from, you know, fear and spirit worship and or animism through sort of spiritualism up to various arenas of polytheism up to monotheism, then, you know, into revelation. And then she mentioned that, you know, what the first four revelations were, and then introduced the fifth epical revelation. And the process by which she discussed this topic was very historically relevant and really interesting to her audience. And out of the 25 or however many people were at the service that day, she says it's a very small church, she's ended up with a study group of 8 people who are just completely dedicated to this every week. And she was going to be on the road for a few weeks with this Let the Light In tour, and she was worried, you know, she brought it to the group to ask whether or not they wanted to take a break until she got back or wanted to continue reading. They all decided they wanted to go ahead and keep meeting every week and continue reading on without her. That is just fabulous.
That's great.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of the other ideas that came up at the United Urantia Family Festival this last week in Montreal, we had a really inspiring workshop that was led by Gaetan Charlin. He's the president of the UAI, and he presented the initiative of creating 1,000 new study groups. That's really been our mandate from the beginning, was we were supposed to start study groups. And if we know of, let's say, anywhere up to 500 existing study groups, some of them might be more active than others. But he said the real purpose in a study group should be training the people who are in your study group to each go out and start another one. And I thought, now that is an idea that should have been obvious to me these past 30 years, but never really had occurred to me that could be actually part of the process of study groups, is leading by example, but also perhaps having a portion of our time every year where we really investigate within our study group what are some of the opportunities that we may be missing to branch out and start new ones.
Anyway, I think a lot of people that read the Urantia book really see spirituality as such a personal thing, and they may struggle with making that outreach because they're so used to having a type of belief system that isn't necessarily popular.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't really talk about naturally. And once they do get into a study group, it gives them an opportunity to actually vocalize some of their thoughts. And that's an enlightening experience in itself.
Absolutely.
I know it was for me, because I was really, like a lot of people are, alone until I, had my first study group experience. And I think organized religion really, they've got years and years of practice at ministry. And I think we could actually learn a lot from organized religion in its ministry and organization.
That's a really great topic that you bring up, Justin, because since I've been ordained, people who want ministry are literally just showing up at my doorstep. And figuratively, many of them are reaching out to me online. And people who I may have never even had a personal conversation with via chat or via Facebook will contact me and say, I need help, or I'm in trouble, or I need a minister. I need someone to confess to, or I need someone to pray with me, or I need some guidance. And for me, that experience has been awesome. And I mean awesome in the original use of the term, that it leaves me feeling awestruck, that
sure,
that I feel like my angels or their angels or there's some kind of feeling of personality that gets expressed even through just things that you post or things that you write about, where people can, it's sort of palpable, that sincere interest or that sincere willingness to serve comes across the airwaves somehow. And I believe that is a critical element that is needed within our movement. We need to be able to serve one another. You know, the Urantia book says that there are three duties for believers. One is the wholehearted dedicating to doing the will of the Father in heaven. Two is the duty to love our fellows and to create this brotherhood or this kingdom, this family experience with all of our fellows on the planet. But the third, and maybe the most overlooked duty, is the duty that we owe to the fellowship of believers. That, those of us who are ministering and those of us who are doing outreach really do need each other. We need to be able to love and trust and support one another. And that's a real critical piece of that foundation or that network of of making a stable community. And in that way, we have several really excellent examples of that within existing religions in the world. There are some groups that really do a good job of supporting one another from within that specific sect or that specific denomination. Am I making sense? Are you following any of that?
Absolutely. It definitely makes sense, and you're right. I mean, one of the most important things we can do is be there for each other. And who else knows the burdens of outreach more than somebody else who's doing outreach themselves? We definitely need to lean on each other. I wholeheartedly agree with that.
And I think one of the benefits we get from the networks that we have created online, at least with Facebook, is we do get a tremendous amount of support from each other. And like my sending you that article or my feeding off some of the questions you post, Dave, and
yeah.
Justin, just getting some of the creative ideas that you share, you know, other people can really be inspired by that and think, well, if he can do that, I can do that. Or if she can do that, I should try this. It's a very supportive feel. But one of the downsides of this is that there are some other sites. There are some other discussion groups that are not very supportive at all. I don't know if any of you have experienced that, but I think some of you know what I'm talking about, where when we get on the air or when we get on the Ethernet, on the Internet, we seem to sometimes have a sense of anonymity, and we do and say things that we would never do or say, you know, in our own living room, you know.
Right.
Sitting next to one another or standing face to face, we wouldn't engage in anything close to the kind of sort of what I will call sort of belligerent debate as opposed to warm, friendly, Sim Boyton style debate.
Right.
And I would like to take this opportunity to speak to that and to say how destructive that is, not only to our to the individuals who can sometimes be really devastated by that experience, but to all the potentially new readers who might be wandering by to see what we're all about. And they run into something that's anything but spiritually fragrant.
Well, yeah, I mean, Jesus talks about we have to all count the cost. We all have to count the cost of what it's going to take to walk, or at least attempt to walk in the Master's footsteps, and the way we do that is by realizing that we are responsible for what we do and say, and we are ambassadors of the kingdom, and when we are out, we are representing our Father. And so, I mean, it is important that we keep that in mind. There's a great responsibility that we're held to, not only on the Internet or in person, but anything we do, everywhere we go, when you
we're
mention the Father's name. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And, you know, that is sort of part of the workshop that I do on learning to love one another or learning to love our enemies, utilizing the Jesusonian method for social interaction. There are some responsibilities that we have also as study group leaders or as outreach ministers or evangelists is to become more emotionally resilient, because when we have a trusted network of fellow leaders or fellow disciples or however we want to refer to our, you know, our sort of Urantian in-group, is that we depend upon each other for support and for nurturing and for love. But have you noticed that when you really love someone and you know they love you, that when you do something that's really out of line and they call you on it, it doesn't feel like a criticism. It doesn't feel like an attack. It feels like a really loving kind of warning or like heads up, you know, when you do that, it really hurts my feelings, or when you do that, it's not very attractive or not very effective. And, you know, when we get that kind of feedback from each other, if we can remember that these are, you know, we need positive as well as negative feedback sometimes. And especially when we're out in the public doing public work. I know that when I've been called on my stuff, in the last few years, I've really genuinely felt grateful. Because, you know, none of us want to be out there, you know, dirtying up the water. That life-giving water, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I think we have a duty to empower those within the community to be that sort of person that empowers others. I know with ministry in particular, people who want to minister do struggle with a lot of self-doubt, a lot of self-confidence, because the world at large does seek to control your thoughts and to make you doubt. So I think if we use the community as a place to empower ourselves and to empower others, we can use those skills in the world at large as well. You know, I try to, when I talk to others, like you say, use that type of loving understanding when I see something that may be a little out of line or a little off kilter. You know, try to have a one-pointedness in my mind about what is right, but also have that kind of fluidity about ways that you can get to what's right. You know, to sort of be understanding and merciful, as Jesus would say.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, our lines are open, listeners, if any other people want to call in and join in the discussion. We've been talking about ways to build new study groups, ways to do outreach, ways to work within existing religion, how to sort of pick the low-hanging fruit. And we'd love to have your feedback, your questions, your discussion. Please call us and join us.
And if anybody can find the quote I'm looking for, I'm looking for a quote that goes something to this nature. I can't find it in the book. I'm searching, but it's basically says that nothing a child God can do or does can be considered normal. Everything
nothing
we do,
a what?
Nothing a child of God does is considered normal. This isn't the actual quote. I'm paraphrasing because I can't find it at the moment. I'm searching for it.
Is it like nothing? No work is more sacred.
I'm trying to find it. I don't know. I'm searching right now on Truthbooks. Truthbook.com search engine.
Mm-hmm.
They have a really good one. Searching there, I just can't find it. But it basically states that nothing we can do is considered normal. It basically goes on to say that you should go about from that moment on doing your work for the Father. So basically, no matter what occupation you're doing, God's
right.
will can be done in it.
Right.
And it just goes into speaking to the same topic what we were speaking on, that everything we do we're responsible for. It doesn't matter where we're at, we can do mm-hmm. God's will, and it's important to know that.
And on the same vein, when we make mistakes in our attempts to do that, if we really mess up, that you know we should refrain from judging ourselves too harshly, that, you know, no personality is, you know, sort of like permanently judged or permanently damaged by one unfortunate episode. I find
right.
that also to be really comforting.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
We got into a discussion about this fairly recently with one of our other new young evangelists out there named Jacob, and he was really getting down on himself about having made a mistake. And I said, hey, we're supposed to make mistakes.
Yeah, that's what we're here for.
They're actually good. Not mistakes that you know you're making, like when you're doing them. We have another word for that, right? But those inadvertent mistakes where we really have great intentions, but we just, you know, take the wrong path or the wrong tact, and we normally have relatively immediate repercussions, right?
Right.
And sometimes those repercussions are fairly painful, and it's the reaction to and the courage to honestly face those mistakes, and hopefully to willingly and openly share them with our friends and with our associates, that gives us an opportunity for expanded growth. Because I don't have to make all the same mistakes you make. If you can trust me well enough to share your mistakes with me, to confess in a way with me, to like look at it together. That's another one of the benefits that comes out of being involved in a study group or a home church or a cell church or a discussion group, is that you can, if you've created the right kinds of boundaries for that group, you know, sort of some mutually agreed upon standards of behavior, codes of behavior, where there's a safe place to share the sometimes really painful mistakes that we make, so that everyone else doesn't have to learn the same hard way. Have you ever thought about that?
And the process of understanding those mistakes that the other person made and forgiving them for those mistakes helps us to forgive ourselves. You know, there's no better place to be imperfect than here on this imperfect world.
Amen to that, brother.
That's right.
Isn't that the truth? How many times a day are you tempted to say, well, you know, you are on a double default decimal planet, you know.
Yeah.
Nothing else has gone according to plan yet.
Hey, I'm just happy my knuckles aren't dragging any longer.
Yeah. I mean, we've done pretty well if you think about it. You know, if you look at all the cities on our planet, you know, all the positive things that we've created, given the circumstances that we've had, you know, you have to give yourself a little bit of credit, you know, and I'd say we got there through trial and error.
Yeah.
You know, that's a strategy that we can actually use to learn and grow and become wise, is trial and error. I use it all the time.
Yeah, I really agree. And I also really love the quote in the Arantxa book about truth and reality, even in our sort of messed up plane, our sort of messed up world, is that still the reality is that we're really looking at a backdrop of light interrupted by a few splotches of darkness, rather than looking at a background of black or darkness,
mm-hmm.
just, you know, punctuated by a few dots of light. And I love that imagery. I love that analogy. It is so
Absolutely.
Useful. It is so useful because it's generically readily accessible to everyone. There's nothing, quote, Urantian jargon about it. It's a universal truth that we can share with anybody, whether they're a believer or a non. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. You really can't talk to anyone with straight Urantian jargon if they're not a Urantian reader. So, you know, you can if they do read it, but if you're just talking to someone who's not really familiar with the Urantia book, it's good to use truths that can be of any source. You know, that's generally what I'll try to do if I, you know, post a thought that I have. It's not necessarily in Urantian wording, but it's in a form that anybody can really contribute to or own as their own, as a truth, you know, because truth is universal. And as you say, we might as well not have a certain organization about that, about those thoughts.
Well, that also brings up another perfect segue into the discussion about reaching out to other organizations, reaching out to other groups, the groups that I consider sort of the low-hanging fruit, the organizations whose ideals and beliefs are very sort of evolutionarily close to things that the Urantia book shares or talks about. Dave, you and I were talking about that last night, about how the Urantia book in many ways is a compilation of the very best of human ideas and philosophies, that they tried to add real revelation as frugally as possible.
Right.
And that in order to make this accessible to the human mind circuitry and our experiential evolution, that many of the parts of the book are really compilations of human authors, plagiarizing, if you will, human authors. And if that's true, then there are a lot of other human beings out there who already have a lot of these ideas. Excuse me, I'm just losing my voice here.
But yeah, I understand exactly what you mean by that, and it was a great conversation that we had on that subject, because it is exactly what we have, or what we had up to that point. It is the best knowledge and wisdom that we had collectively, and the collective consciousness is a pretty big concept. I consider it an advanced truth. But the collective consciousness plays a major, major role for not only us, but for the generations to follow. You know, like I had a friend of mine on Facebook mentioned to me the other day, he's like, yeah, you know what, keep pushing forward. And I had replied back that I'm just pushing on the backs of the people ahead of me. And
right.
And the people that are going to be behind us are going to accept these truths more easily, because the collective consciousness, it's out there, and we're putting into the pool. So whatever you're able to understand, even if it's an original truth, or at least an original truth to this planet, it goes into the pool of consciousness where everybody can pull from. And the older generations, it's harder, because we're sort of breaking through all this religious, I don't know, what we've been taught and told our entire lives. And we're breaking through that and having more truth concepts come available to us. You know, the restatement of Jesus' life and how he lived it. I think that's important to understand, that part four of the book is a restatement of the fourth revelation. The actual fifth revelation is parts one, two, and three. That's the new revelation to us. Part four was just a restatement of the fourth revelation. And part four, of course, to me, because I'm all heart, I wear my heart on my sleeve. That's absolutely my favorite part. I've read that part many, many times, although I've only actually read the entire Urantia book close to three times now. But part four I've read many, many, many times.
Yeah, it's a restatement, but it's also an upstepping of the ideas. It does upstep, or it does restate a lot of philosophical ideas that you can actually find in books. I know there's a PDF that I found one time that had all
Matthew Block.
Right.
Yeah, and his life work has been dedicated to finding human sources for the book. And he's been doing an amazing job.
Fantastic. Oh, yeah.
He must be
squaredcircles.com.
Some of these bookstores, and I mean, it amazes me that he can walk into a bookstore and within a matter of moments, you know, he'll have found a book on a shelf that happens to be one of the ones he should be looking for. I mean, and how many people have we heard have that same kind of experience when they've been asking for truth, or they've been praying for a new revelation, and then they go into a bookstore and there it is. And
right.
How many other people have walked by that same shelf and never even looked up? But one of the topics, one of the offshoots of this topic that I really wanted to get to with regards to human authors and human interpretations and the best of human, I would say the best of all the visionaries kind of conglomerated into this one source. I have sort of a concern about the amount of time that we spend preaching to the choir. As a movement and as the different organizations, we've gotten really good. We have a lot of experience at putting together conferences. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, yes.
That's just one of the things we've been doing for the last 50 years. We've gotten pretty good at it. We have some amazing, amazing presentations and workshops and plenary speeches and seminars and retreats. You know, each time I go, I find something else that just blows me away with its fragrance, with its, you know, cutting right through to the quick. You know, there are these things that just transform me by having been there to experience that. But I feel this sort of inner sadness or genuine, I don't know how to describe it, but it's almost grieving that we aren't sharing this with the rest of the world. And I would like to propose that we could consider putting on conferences with some of the other visionaries in the world, some of the more progressive or forward-thinking religionists out there, authors, philosophers, ministers, presenters, and find sort of common topics of interest that we could focus on for a specific conference, like the kinds of themes that we create for our own conferences. What if we created a theme for a conference and then invited, you know, the best of the best, the other authors or speakers in the world who are close, if not right on track, to where we're going, and we have a platform where we all present together. You know, we have different workshops or different presenters where our Urantia Book presenters are woven in to the curriculum or the schedule of the conference, but where we can present side by side with other people. And some of our presenters might be overtly presenting ideas from the Urantia Book. Others might be bootlegging some of the concepts to put on workshops that are generically, universally going to be acceptable. One of the things that really, really confirmed to me that this was a doable project and this was a track that we as a movement should begin to consider is that last year I was at the summer study session in Chicago and attended a workshop put on by Jackie Corey and Tony Finstead. And the topic was the inevitabilities. And this was one of the best, most functional, like usable data that you could just apply to your life really easily that I had ever been to. And this was a restatement of a workshop that Tony and Jackie created for her second grade class. She's a second grade teacher. And they were describing the reaction these kids had to studying the inevitabilities in class. This was not a class on religion. This was just looking at life and the way life teaches us things and a new way to look at our problems and the new way to approach problem solving. And they said the kids loved it. They just ate it up. And it brought me back to when I was a kid, you know, 6 or 7 years old, when I first started learning about the Urantia Book from my parents and how excited I got about these new tools for thinking, even at 6 or at 7. But I also found that that workshop would have just been just as effective for a group of elders from our church or, you know, at a nursing home. And I just was so inspired by that, and I thought, yes, these are the kinds of presentations we need to be doing outside of our movement. You know,
right.
Why aren't we leading the, you know, leading the charge, so to speak, to put on events where many of the visionaries in the world would be invited to present, many authors who have really fabulous books that are, you know, bestsellers. Think
forward
of the type
thinkers.
Of audience that we could bring to a conference like that. Instead of, you know, having a couple hundred, maybe close to 1,000 people maximum that we've ever had at any of our conferences, we could very easily be looking at a conference group of a couple thousand.
Wow.
And
yeah.
I was inspired also by one of our guests by the name of Arnie Ondas from Florida, who was profoundly successful in introducing people to the concepts and to the book itself by doing an introduction to the Arantia book at a spiritual healing, metaphysical spiritual healing convention or conference. You know, there's so many of those kinds of opportunities that we're letting slip through our fingers because we're not focusing on that. And I'm wondering, if we put a conference like that on every 3 years, or maybe even every year, somewhere else in North America, or perhaps even overseas, we would stop being considered as just a fringe organization. We would start to be seen as part of the visionary network. And the TED conferences have really inspired me in that way. And I listen to some of these amazing presenters and think, you know, I know some people who would fit right in with these people. I mean, I know some presenters who would absolutely be their peers. And the
well,
kind
thank
of,
you for creating that vacuum, because, I mean, just by mentioning that, you are putting it into the collective consciousness that it needs to be filled, and hopefully somebody will be moved, maybe even by hearing this broadcast, to organize an event like that. I know I would love to participate, and I can't think of one Urantian who wouldn't love to participate in that. That's something that needs to be done. You know, there's a lot
of
things.
I'm putting it out there that this is part of my mission on this planet, is to help facilitate the beginning of that kind of connection and creating what I call strategic alliances with other people who are almost in the same place that we are. We have to blend
with what is already there, and we have to fill that void, as you said, the vacuum that you said, Dave. And that's how we will get into the consciousness at a greater level. We can't go in and say, okay, this is the truth, and this is what is presented in the book, and this is the only truth. We really have to see what has evolved culturally and find our place in that spectrum to answer the questions that have arisen because of the incompleteness of the evolutionary process. And if we find our place there, then we have the chance to lead those who have maybe had a question answered by us. We have a chance to lead them into our direction, and maybe we can grow from there.
Yeah, I think so. Well, I'm again asking any callers, any listeners who would like to call in and get involved in this conversation, please do. And to let you know that we're going to be continuing the theme of this show next Saturday as well. And we hope to get some more second-generation Urantians to participate in the conversation. We all tend to share a similar perspective on these things. One of the things that we have noticed in our second-generation network online is that we not only share common challenges and common problems, but we also share some common experience with being very comfortable talking to other people about our belief system, feel very comfortable talking to other people about the Urantia book in a way that many first-generation readers are still a little bit hesitant. I think it's probably because it's really woven into the very fabric of foundation of concepts and spiritual and religious and philosophical ideas that we grew up with. It's really a part of us from the very beginning. And so we're gonna talk about some insights that we have that we'd like to share and that we'd like to discuss. So please put the word out if you guys know any other second-generation UBers, please let them know about next week's show.
Awesome. Well, Dave and Crystalline, I will let you go.
All right.
Thank you
what
so much for joining us, Justin. It's a pleasure.
Where you are, Justin. Pardon me?
Yes. I will catch you on Facebook, and we'll see you later, okay?
All right. Thanks for
God
calling.
God bless.
God bless.
Thank you. God bless.
So, Dave, do you have any ideas about what I was calling the low-hanging fruit or some of the other organizations we could interface with?
Well, one of the things that I do on my Facebook is I've joined all sorts of religious and different faiths and beliefs groups. And when they post things, what I do is I just repost the highlights of what they're saying. Like,
mm-hmm.
for instance, if I join a Muslim group, when they post something about Allah, I repost the truth in that I discern as the truth, and I just illuminate that for them. And that's all we can continue to do. By doing that, you'd be surprised. I've had several people friend me from different religious organizations who don't even know me, but they see, you know, after I repost or re-highlight what they've originally said, you get a lot of positive feedback that way. So for me, it's worked. It's built me up to a lot of friends on Facebook now. And thanks to the tool you gave me the other day about Google Translate, that helps out a lot as well.
Isn't it though? I mean, it's not perfect, but
it's
totally understandable.
Absolutely. You can discern it way better than I would ever have the opportunity to without it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I do that. I also, I've made business cards, which I've talked about in the past as well. I made bumper stickers.
Tell us again about some of your business cards and bumper stickers.
You know, on the business cards, it's a high-gloss paper. And so it's a background of the universe. The front has a background of the earth, and it's got a glow to it. And on the back of the card, it's just a nebula. So it's nice looking. It's very attractive. And on the front it says, you are appreciated. You make a difference to the universe just by being alive. And that's all it says. And I think the importance of saying that is they get the first opportunity to look at the card and hear a positive message about themselves. And if the spirit of truth within will allow them to recognize, you know what, I am unique. I am important. And it's great to hear that from somebody, especially somebody I don't know. And they turn on the back, and on the back it has a wonderful message. It's very simple. It says, one God, one people. God is our Father, and I am your brother. The only price to pay for this liberating truth is faith. Underneath that, it says, seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. And in finding these, all other things essential to eternal survival shall be secured therewith. I put, contact me if you ever need me. We are family. DavidJTucker@gmail.com. And at the very bottom, it says, read the revelation for yourself for free. At www.urantia.org. And it's a way for me to minister to people without saying anything negative whatsoever. Everything that's on that card is absolutely positive. And if they like that, if that rings true to them, they'll follow the instructions. I've had people who've emailed me randomly that I forgot that I've given a card to, and we've sparked up conversations. One of them got a copy of the Urantia book, started reading it online for free. Another one just had wanted to have conversations with me and you know, kind of play the devil's advocate. And that was fun as well. I was like, hey, this is an opportunity for me to at least give my interpretation of your antidote. But anytime anybody asks anything from me, I do make sure that I let them know, this is my interpretation. It's very important for you to have your own. So, it brings me to, this is just one opportunity to go and be able to minister. I get on Facebook every day and post a new intriguing question that sometimes is creates a lot of stir, sometimes not so much. Sometimes it's just able for people to see how everybody else interprets the truth to them. And it's good to be able to participate in things like that, because I really believe it's the whole reason I'm alive. The whole purpose for living, the only thing I can do that's worthwhile is learn to do God's will and to show other people God through my personality. And that's what we do.
Well, one of the topics that's come up in the chat room is some of the similarities to LDS or the believers in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints or the Mormons, living in Colorado and being out in the western part of the United States, we have a lot of contact with that offshoot of Christianity. And I think we can all agree that they have done a few things really, really, really right. They have probably some of the strongest family values that are not just sort of hypocritically promoted, but not really lived, you know. They really do show some phenomenal examples of family continuity and community support. And not only that, but they've been very materially successful, and they've been able to support and facilitate spreading that financial, economic, or material success around through their community. I've been very impressed by the sincerity and authenticity of their youth program and their childhood learning program. I can't tell you how many Mormon teenagers or young adults that I have run into who are completely and sincerely devoted second milers. And I happen to know a few who are also Urantia Book readers. I know that there are even some elders who are Urantia Book readers. The fact that Stephen Covey has been rumored to have read the Urantia Book and sort of bootlegged some of those teachings in many of his writings. He has been such a popular author in not only spiritual or self-help circles, but also in the business world. The impact he's had on the leadership in business has been profound. I think that that's probably another place that we should try to find some common ground, especially given the fact that the fellowship, anyway, is heading there to Salt Lake City for their next international conference next summer. I'd like to put a challenge out to our listeners, and both the live listeners as well as those who will listen to this show in the archive format, to possibly come together, contact me or Dave Tucker or Susan Cook, who is the event planner for that event, for that conference, to put out a challenge to see if we may be able to come up with some workshops, seminars, or retreats that we could invite some LDS members to participate with us. I would really like
Absolutely.
To see us try something like that. I mean, really stretch our boundaries a little and see what kind of creative problem solving we can come up with. What do you think, Dave?
Well, you know, I went to, interesting enough, I went to Mormon Church a couple of months back. My fiance, her family is Mormon, and they invited me to their Bible studies, and And then after the second time of going, they asked me to lead the Bible study. So I looked up everything I could in the Urantia book with reference to the Bible, and I led the study group like that. And you would be surprised how easily and readily these people are to recognizing truth. They are really good people, in my opinion. I mean, I don't mean to say that as a stereotype at all, but
right,
in
I don't
general,
think it's condescendingly. It's more like looking at them with some reverence and awe,
yes,
frankly.
Absolutely. I feel the exact same way. And then it seemed like a couple weeks after that, I had a couple missionaries come by my door, and I invited them in, and we had dinner, and they came by every Monday for a good couple months, and I read part of the Book of Mormon with them, and instead of forcing the Urantia book on them, I did talk to them about the book. I did let them look at it and see it. What I would do was just when they brought up a conversation that didn't ring true to me or that was difficult to talk about, like atonement, it's a very touchy subject, instead of just denouncing it, I took the best out of it, and I just illuminated it as best I could. You would be surprised. These people they're just so welcoming. They're very, very nice. And when I went to their church, it was amazing because they had everybody participating in their church. It wasn't just one person up there like I was used to at the Catholic Church. It was people from their congregation coming up and sharing their story and talking and giving the lesson. And I liked that. Then they all got organized to do service. And I was like, oh, my God, this is great. They're going to go out and clean a park. I'm like, this is what I want. I was like, what I started doing was making a list of what I wanted in the church to attend. If I were to ever attend a church, this is what I'd want. And I made a list of that. And so now I'm going to present those ideas to my study group and see if anybody wants to. If nobody does, it's okay. But what I'm going to do is once a month, I'd like anybody from me and my study group to participate in some form of service if they want to, if the Spirit moves them.
When you do something like that together, it's a very bonding experience. It's much more bonding even than sitting around and reading and discussing together. Working together is the way to truly fall in love with your fellows. It's the way to really develop teamwork that we know is one of our primary educational functions in this local universe. I mean,
and I found the best way to do it is just to ask people if they need things. It was great because these missionaries, they knew we were moving, and without mentioning anything, they just asked, well, when can we come to help? They didn't ask if I needed their help or if I wanted to help. They asked when they could come to help. And I thought, you know, that's wonderful. How wonderful is that, these people are going to ask to do something. So I'm going to start off, instead of asking people to do service with me, I'm going to start off by asking the members of my study group how I can help them, what they need done. Do they need help moving or packing or cleaning or painting a fence? Do they need something? And I think
I sure could have used your study group last month when I had to move.
I know. I moved too last month. I know. But, it's one day. One day a month for somebody that you love. And that's Jesus. Jesus says, that which you have done to the least of my brethren, you have done that also to me. And hey, I'm all about that. You know, when can we get to work?
Absolutely. And, you know, getting back to what you were talking about of some of the positive influences you had with the Mormon missionaries that you invited them in and you became friends with, I invite everybody who ever knocks on our door, I invite them in for coffee or tea or a snack, and they always come back, and we end up having the most wonderful, commonality. It's really a... You know, Jesus gives us such a fabulous example of that when he's working with Gainet, to engage people of other faiths. And when I said before that, you know, our duties are threefold, you know, first to God, then to our the brotherhood of man, the fatherhood of God first, the brotherhood of man second, but the third to the service of the fellowship of believers. I conceive of the fellowship of believers crossing all religious lines,
right,
that They don't have to. You don't have to believe what I believe, because even within our movement, hardly any of us agree on anything. I mean,
all
I don't
right.
know if you've noticed that. We have a few things that we agree on, but there's a lot of things we don't. And I found that true in every church I've ever attended. The person sitting next to me on the pew, doesn't matter if we've both been raised Catholic or we've both been raised Presbyterian or Methodist or whatever, the person sitting next to you on the pew probably is going to disagree with you on
right.
several issues of theology. You'll definitely find that true in any seminary, anywhere in this, you know, in the world, that disagreements come up between religionists as often as disagreements come up between anyone else on the planet.
Absolutely.
And I don't see that. I don't see that as a negative. I welcome disagreements. I enjoy discussing the ways in which we don't see eye to eye, because every single time I learn something.
Absolutely. It's the only way. It's the best way to learn, and it's the best way to be able to learn how to better serve people that are like-minded to that individual later on in the future.
And even people who are not like-minded. I mean, I have some of the most spirited discussions with people who do not see things the way I do. And what I think is most important in those kinds of discussions is your intention and the authenticity and the sincerity of your intention to learn. If we are really just out there trying to learn everything we can from all of our fellows, you will find you have a lot less contention, a lot less of that air of contention between you, because people can tell. It's palpable. When you're sincerely interested in hearing their perspective, they feel acknowledged.
Acknowledged, appreciated.
And one last thing on the topic of the Mormon Church is that if you and your study group, for example, might just attend their one Sunday a month where they it's their Sunday for witnessing. And they don't really have any worship service designed into the program. It's pretty much just people coming up who feel moved to share their spiritual experience from the past week or from the past month, some way in which God really impacted their lives that month. And I love being in that church or that temple for that service, because people of all ages come up to the front of the church, stand behind the podium or with the mic, and they share their, you know, spiritually relevant experience with God from that
Absolutely.
Of their life. And it's almost exactly what the Urantia family group is planning to do with their family ties. I don't know if you heard about it, but they launched a new website concept, which is a little different from your standard quote of the day, because it's people from all over the world sending in their favorite quote and the way in which that impacted their lives. So they're not
wow.
just they're taking the words from the book, but they're personalizing it and sharing it through their own life experience. And I think that is just brilliant. I just can't.
Oh, that's wonderful.
I think it's fabulous. Well, that was the same type of experience I had sitting in this Mormon witnessing service. And
oh,
I'll
yeah.
tell you, I could do that. I could do that every week, every Sunday, without
all day long, huh?
All day long, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to bring up a book that I had recently read. It's called Strength Finders. In fact, it's Strength Finders 2.0. The reason I bring up this book.
Strength
yeah,
Finder?
Strength Finder.
Finder.
Yeah,
F-I-N-D-E-R. It's Strength Finder.
Yeah, it's called Strength
cool.
Finder. And the purpose of this book was to bring up how a lot of us are raised to believe that we should devote most of our energy and attention on our faults and our problems and our troubles. And
right.
what it does is it focuses on the fact that it'd be more progressive and more productive to find your strengths and work on those. and build those strengths. And it's really, it opened up a new way of thinking for me, because I did realize that, you know, all the times that I would spend focusing on my problems and my negatives, a lot of times it would do nothing but bring me more down and hurt, you know, keep me at a low level, because I would beat up myself, you know. And kind of like what you were talking about earlier, is if you even spend half the amount of time that we spend worrying over things that really have absolutely no importance whatsoever, if we spent that half of that time working on our strengths, how much more, you'd increase productivity by 400%. And this is a proven study. In the book, it talks about the study that was done at the University of Indiana, and the productivity that they did this within a work environment. So, like, employees would read this book, they would take this test, they would find their best strengths, and so would the managers. And the managers would then learn how to best work with their employees, and the employees would learn how to best work with their managers. And it increased productivity by 400%, because they asked one question. The question was, are you doing right now what you do better than anything else in your life? And at your work, basically, are you doing what you do better than anything else? And most people said no. Most people said, no, I'm not doing what I do better than anything else. And they said, well, if you're not doing right now for a living what you do better than anything else, then you need to find a job in that environment. And then it doesn't become work any longer. It becomes something that you love doing. And if you're able to work effortlessly, you're also able to incorporate more God time.
There's another book, I think, it might be the same book, but I think it was called Focus on Your Strengths. And I'm not even sure if that's actually the correct title, but it's a book that Tim Hobbs was really promoting to all of his business employees and his business associates a few years ago. And they had everybody who bought the book could go online and take this survey. You put in the code that was in the inside cover of the book, and then you would be able to access this website, and it would basically tell you, you know, where were the areas that you were the most likely to succeed in. I would say, like, transferable skills into various sorts of occupational directions. And every time I would go, I think I probably ended up buying four separate books. Because every time I would go online, the number that was in my book had already been used by someone else. So I think people must have just been going into the bookstores and opening the books and copying the access codes. So I never actually got to go online and take the survey. But it was a very similar kind of focus, and I wonder if it might have been quoting some of the same studies. But
yeah,
I'm
very
interested
well.
In this. Very interested in this topic, and so you'll have to email me the name of the author.
Oh, I certainly will. And I think another one that also was very, very moving for me too is a book written by Malcolm Gladwell, and it's called Outliers.
That's the one. Oh yes.
Yeah.
I love
Outliers. Is a fantastic book. This gives you the understanding of, you know, to master anything, it's going to take 10,000 hours. To master any one skill, it would take you 10,000 hours of doing it. And you know, what's great is a lot of us who have the spirit within us that moves us to start study groups and to do outreach and to preach the gospel and minister the gospel everywhere we go, it comes down to, what are you doing to prepare that? Well, people like you and I, Crystalline, have spent a lot of time in sales and working with personalities and learning how to listen to people's questions and discern what they're really looking for. And, you know, people like you and I have 10,000 hours in dealing with personalities and dealing
right.
with people. And that's
right.
a huge opportunity for people like you and I to do outreach. And it's so much easier. It comes naturally for us. And for other people, if you're interested in doing that, or if you're looking to possibly get more involved with outreach, or maybe even get the strength to start a study group, I would say practice. because it's just like any muscle. If you work it, it will grow. And, you know, I look at it like this. When I'm not at work, I have to make it to where outreach is my full-time job.
Right.
And if I don't take it seriously, it won't produce any fruit.
Right. And it's remarkable, as I said at the beginning of the show, it's remarkable when you make that commitment, that wholehearted commitment. And for me, frankly, the ceremony of becoming ordained was such an emotional experience. I cried through the entire ceremony. And I didn't used to be a very crying-oriented person, you know. I have, since my ordination, I've turned into the, like, just huge crybaby. I get so emotionally turned on or so moved that almost every time I pray and absolutely every time I meditate, my eyes will just start watering like crazy. But this is one of the ways in which I've found that I know I'm on the right track for me, is that every moment I spend working in this field, it's recreational for me. It's not that I don't have reverence for it or that I don't take it seriously, but it's so incredibly satisfying. I've never done anything that's brought me this much happiness and satisfaction.
That
brings up another point that I'd like to share with you and with the reader. I know I don't have to share it with you because you are just naturally so ebullient, you know, but this is the almost a commandment, really, that Jesus gave, is to be of good cheer. It is really so important when we're doing outreach, even if it's online, to make every statement we put out there really positive. And I made that a point for the first couple of years, that I just really was not willing to put something negative on there, even when I was having a really bad day. And I broke down last month, as many of you know, and I posted that when my dad came to visit us last month in Colorado, he ended up in the hospital. He went in the emergency room with what he thought might be a heart attack. And it turned out not to be, but he was having really, really high heart rate, like over 200 beats a minute. And he's a retired physician, so he knew he was in trouble, and we thought he was going to end up having open heart surgery. And it, you know, I posted that, you know, my dad was in trouble, I needed your prayers, and I got this outpouring of support that just moved me to tears. And one of the things that happened right after that was a friend of mine from my childhood in Africa had sent me an email that said, my Urantia book came in the mail today.
Oh, yes.
And I was blown away. I was blown away because I had never even discussed it with him. And I immediately became, you know, overwhelmed, and as I frequently do, just ran off at the mouth and wrote, you know, immediately wrote like a 5-page response to his one sentence. That my Urantia book arrived in the mail, and it was like, oh, you got to look at here, and you got to read this section over here, and oh my God, this over here is so inspiring, and oh, you would really love this, you know. And then, for once, I hit save draft instead
good
of pushing send. And instead, my response was, hey, John, that's really cool. I hope you like it, Crystalline. And that was it. And I put
that. Oh, ouch, that must have been so painful.
Oh, my God, you know. It tried every urge, natural urge of my personality, but it was so much more effective. Then I didn't hear from him for a couple of weeks, and then I was starting to get really scared. I'm like, oh, no, he doesn't like it. I don't know, what's he thinking? And I never go into that frame of thought whenever I introduce somebody to the book. I always let it go right away.
Yeah.
But I didn't this time. I was like waiting. I was waiting on pins and needles, waiting for his response. After 2 weeks, and you know how long that is in girl years.
Oh, yeah.
After 2 weeks, I hadn't heard anything. I couldn't help it anymore. I had to write. So I sent him an email that said, hey, Johnny, If that's too much, I mean, I know it's over 2,000 pages, don't feel like you have to read it to make me happy, because it's not for everyone. It's not a required course, but, you know, I was kind of hoping you'd like it, but, you know, won't take it personally. I get back this email from him that says, Crystalline, I'm not reading the book to make you happy. I ordered the book because you are so happy. And I wanted to find out what you were into. And I was like,
that is
wow.
So wonderful.
Being of good cheer, if just being of good cheer in front of other people can bring them to really being interested in what you're doing. And like Questor always says, let your light shine. Well, letting our light shine is being, you know, overcome with joy in front of other people. Because that's also something that people don't really see every day. Somebody who's really happy, even when the stock market dropped, you know, 300 points. Being really happy, even when you're ill. Being really happy,
Whoa.
Even when you're in pain.
Oh, yeah. You know, I think I would like to mention, a brother of mine asked me to mention that, you know, the spiritual awakening that's taking place. It's a great movement. And it is inspired by enthusiasm. It's inspired by joy. It's inspired by our daily living. And you know what? People do the same thing for me, you, and all sorts of other people who have God in their lives. We have this joy, this glistening aura about ourselves. And it just goes to show that people are recognizing it. They don't have to intellectually grasp it at first, but they're recognizing it. And when people recognize that, it leads men to want to find that. I mean, it's, you know, it's the one purpose that most people have, you know, pursuit of happiness. And you know, also asked me to mention, you know, the major similarities that we all have. I mean, Baskin Robbins has 31 flavors, but it's all just ice cream.
We have another caller who I believe is, I don't think this is the same person who was just listening, and we've only got 5 more minutes, so I'd like to just open it up.
Certainly.
Hang on a second. 817, you're on the air.
Hello, Crystalline. Hello, Dave.
Oh.
Hey, Sister Ann.
Ann.
Hello. I only have a minute because I'm driving. Thank God the laws in Texas allow it.
Well, we've only got 3 minutes left on the show.
First, you know, we're involved with bidding for the Problem of the World Religions to come to Dallas, and it's very exciting in 2014. And your Rancho Book leaders are known as being servers without any agenda. And I just want to speak that over all, and all of those that are listening that are not even your Rancho Book leaders, it doesn't matter because you're spiritual, you're engaged with whatever you are, wherever you are. We really need your help regardless of where the parliament is held, to engage in conversation, because this is exactly what y'all have been talking about. Thank you. Thank you for everything, and I will see you Wednesday, Dave. Our
Love you immensely.
Our Wednesday guest is the great Buddhist, you know, the great Buddhist, and then the Orthodox rabbi. We wrapped it up with the great Quaker, Reverend Phil Gully. God bless everybody.
God bless.
God bless you, Ann. Have a wonderful time.
Thank you. Gotta get off this phone.
Okay. Travel
safe.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, we're down to the last 2 minutes. I can't believe
that
this 2 hours has just gone by so fast for me.
That was wonderful. Thank you, Sister Ann, for calling in. You know, we love you immensely.
We sure do, and we appreciate all of your enthusiasm. She's another person who is always bubbling over with enthusiasm. So I guess just to wrap this up, we're really looking for ideas of new ways to approach the world at large and new ways that we can love and support and be there for each other. Looking at the possibilities of creating some strategic alliances with other religious and spiritual groups, some visionaries, the people who are really trying to help move the world forward toward light and life. And Swami Shiva, we're so glad you joined us today. And Brocap, Brother Dave, Mark, Questor, thanks for being with us as usual. And the doctor, Dr. Jean Arato, I don't know how you pronounce that, but I love that. Thanks for joining us today. And again, we put a call out next week to come back and participate in the conversation. Call in or join us on the chat room. And we really appreciate you taking the time to be with us. And Dave, I can't thank you enough. You are just such a light in my life and such an inspiration to all of us. Thank you.
No, thank you, sisters.
All right, Dave, well, I'll
You've been listening to The Cosmic Citizen, a radio program focused primarily on the study and discussion of the Urantia Book and its teachings. The Urantia Book is a religious text that claims to be written by angels and other superhuman personalities. If you are a Urantia Book reader or a spiritual seeker looking for new truth, we hope and pray you have been nourished and edified by our ministry. Please remember that the views expressed on this program do not...